Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Yo.
Hello.
You may recognize this voice as Steve, in which case, well done.
Wow. Incredible. I never would have guessed.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Reckless Attack, a normally 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons actual play podcast, but this is the April Fool's Day episode.
Hey.
I was going to say, since when are we normal?
Yeah, right. We haven't been normal in like a long time.
Usually, often, sometimes, a D&D podcast. Yeah.
Today, this is a first edition Monster of the Week podcast.
For a second, when you said first edition,
yep.
I was like, same. Wait a second, Steve.
Yep.
You said we were playing Monster of the Week. I cannot deal with Thaco or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. You're all your actual characters.
Break my brain right now if I try to play first edition.
First edition of 19. Yes. Is that good?
No. First edition where it's possible to die during character creation. Just kidding. Mostly.
Oh, look, we're all dead. I guess show's over, guys.
That'd be a good April Fool's joke. Yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't it? Surprise.
Now
wait, somebody cut this out. We're going to save it for next year.
Yes.
This is our emergency backup plan for April Fool's.
Our lowest effort podcast. Not this one.
Gotcha. Yeah.
We know Steve worked very hard on this one. But so, next year.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. This is we'll file that away for next year. This time we are playing Monster of the Week, which is a system called Powered by the Apocalypse. All the rolls are 2 6-sided dice. Add them together, add your appropriate stat. If you get between a 1 and a 6, that is a failure. 7 to 9 is a partial success, so there may be some bad things that happen even though you succeed. And anything above a 10 is a complete success, and so you're good to go if you roll that. One of the aspects of Monster of the Week is that every character has some type of relationship or tie with the other characters at the table. So what we're going to do is go through and you get to listen to that.
Yeah.
Each of the players will look at their character sheet and select another character to have some kind of tie with, and then we'll go from there.
So I'm just going to start. Because
That's perfect. If you could tell, we don't need to go over the name right now, but if you could tell me, tell the template and your tie to which other player or character that is related to.
Okay. But if you want to go over
if you want
to, I want to go over it briefly.
Okay. Sure.
We'll see how far I get. I am playing the mundane, and I have decided that my name is Marcy Mulberry.
Perfect. Excellent.
For some reason or another, I guess I'm a family member with this jerk over here.
Yeah,
I point at my brother.
I
my
just
actual
said that.
Brother.
Are you guys going to be able to play that? I mean, that's kind
of... that's pretty tough. I'll have to channel my inner family member. It'll be tough.
But yes, Marcy is another person's younger sister.
I think, we'll figure that one out.
Okay.
looking at the relationships on my character or my template, the Crooked, the first one that popped out was... This hunter, pointing to one other character, is your younger sibling or child, possibly adopted. You look out for them.
Oh, nice.
So, mine just says, you are close relations.
Tell me exactly how you're related.
Yeah. So, I feel like this satisfies both of our things.
Wow, look at that.
That I get to call you a close relative.
Ooh, actually...
Yeah, why don't we, so you guys already decided you are siblings.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so why don't we introduce the other characters and then we can start
doing
the tangled web.
Yes.
No, okay, so I, Jonathan, hi everyone. I am playing this playbook or this template called The Crooked. My guy, he's been around the block. His name's Darwin. Darwin is the alias. He's tall, slender, he's got a nice fitted robe and slacks, but... People who know him know that he's the guy that you go to when you need something. And it can be anything. Because he just makes that stuff pop out of thin air. Anytime you need something, you go to Darwin.
So if you have a code name.
Yes.
And you are out adventuring with your little sister.
Right.
Does your little sister, is she having
does she know
to keep
your name?
Your secret? Or are you like... What's the dynamic there? Is what I'm curious about.
So this is kind of, it's a little bit of a vacation for Darwin, I would say. And the reason for that is because he is actually trying to travel the world a little bit. And a little bit of a secret. He recently made a pact with the devil. That's one of the...
The
devil.
To be clear, this is Rixia.
Yeah.
The devil. We're making the Christian devil canonical to our podcast.
A devil in this moment.
We haven't even made regular devils fully canonical in our podcast.
One of the moves that you can pick on this playbook or this template is deal with a devil for the crooked. So he made a deal for fabulous wealth and power and prestige and all this stuff. But there was a downside to that pact. And that there is a...
Now I'm here.
He is cursed. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Marcy.
It's like Buffy, where the younger sister just showed up one day.
I like that, actually.
No explanation. Yep.
I have to spend 90% of my time with this one.
You can't be more than 200 feet away from your sibling at all times.
So one of my actual relationships is they're your hero. Exactly the kind of monster hunter you want to be. Tell them why you worship them. And so Marcy thinks that Darwin is the greatest ever.
Okay.
And one is just like clinging to you. And while your code name is Darwin, Marcy's code name is Marcy.
Your actual name.
My actual name.
Because nobody would suspect that.
Okay. Yep, so my pact with the devil is that I got a fangirl and I have to spend all my time around them.
A fangirl who is now actually your sister.
Right. Yes. So, yeah, that's my
character.
My
big brother's the best. Look at how cool he is.
Get away from me. Why am I still checkers again? Darn it.
All right, get away from me. That voice is appropriate for a lot of things.
That's fair. I can only do checkers. All right.
Who's next?
Do you have a fully formed character?
Yeah, I'm ready. Okay. That being the threshold for going next, is a human character yet?
Fully formed, I believe she said. Yeah. Fully formed.
Yeah, but I read between the lines. I did some judicious editing and looking through of what Sophie was actually meaning. Yes, so I am playing the expert template, which I am someone who has dedicated my life to the study of the unnatural. I know their habits, their weaknesses. I may not be youngest or strongest, but my knowledge makes me the biggest threat. In this case, I am actually, I thought I was maybe going to be the youngest, but it turns out we are adventuring with a 12-year-old? edgy middle schooler, high schooler?
This seems to be everybody's first job right out of Rixian College.
She's like 15.
Okay, but still, I am a young academic.
Yes.
In whomst is this young academic? Well, I will be playing Carlisle Llewellyn Carlvin.
Carlvin?
Yes, Cowdery the Sixth. I am a passionate, wealthy academic who essentially has been able to chase his hyper-niche, hyper-specific field of study thanks to generational wealth, where he doesn't ever have to have an actual job, let alone even in the realm of academia, doesn't even have to have a real job because they just made a large donation to whatever university. And they're like, yeah, sure, you can have an office here or whatever. Essentially, we'll get into it a little bit when I'm sure Steve kind of talks about the premise of the adventure, which we know the teensiest bit about, but he has essentially absolutely lucked into this opportunity. This one time that his hyper niche area of study has paid off in literally his entire academic career is this adventure. This is what he loves, what he knows. He knows a bunch about other stuff, but like, he is the only preeminent scholar essentially in like, hey, what happened on this Tuesday in 1406?
Yeah, this was one of those things where you chose this field of study partly because you were interested in it, but mostly because you would never, under any circumstances, have to do field work.
Probably, yeah.
And lo and behold,
here we are.
Here we are, because you have chosen the one thing they need somebody to go out into the field and do.
Indeed. But he is very excited to be a part of all of this. Not probably the most useful in terms of the practical, like...
Are any of us any useful?
The whole party.
Yeah, I mean...
I got negative one tough, so I'm not kicking ass anytime soon.
I do have one. I can kick ass for
also
you.
Also have negative one tough.
Okay.
I would say I'm pretty sharp, but pretty weird.
Okay.
And that is Carlvin.
Do you have to have a threshold of, like, at least one weird to be in this party?
It sure seems like it.
Mm-hmm. That's good to know that all you are tiny babies. Let me just...
Again, I'm like... I would
babies
say...
babies in the terms of Carlvin, toughness.
Yeah, Carlvin is like 27, you know?
Mm-hmm. The monstrous bodyguard and babysitter? Is that what we're going with?
Yeah.
Maybe. Kind of.
Excuse
kinda,
me,
yeah.
I'm almost old enough to drive.
I, Sophie, am playing the monstrous template. The little description is, I feel the hunger, the lust to destroy, but I fight it. I never give in. I'm not human anymore. Not really. But I have to protect those who still are. That way I can tell myself I'm different to the other monsters. Sometimes I can even believe it.
Sophie straight up told us all, I'm going to choose the weirdest one, right. And came up with this one.
Yeah. And then I gave myself the name Agatha. Yep. And so I feel like that name, there's no witch. So it really felt like Ghost was the name
Ghost
one that
good.
had to go with it. So
wait, is your name Agatha Ghost?
No.
I don't know. I thought that was cool. All right, whatever.
It's just a complete coincidence that she's a ghost.
She also has a code name. Yeah. It's whatever. Ghost. She has 300 confirmed kills.
Well, so the relationship one was close relations or a distant descendant. And I was like, am I a distant descendant of the mulberry?
I think 100% you should be. Uh-huh. I think that is definitely the case.
When Darwin made a deal with the devil and created a relation out of nowhere, Agatha got called in to the group.
Well, you really got more of the than what you bargained for.
Yeah, right? Yeah, all I wanted was fabulous wealth, and here I am with a ghost and a child.
A teen, thank you. Uh-huh.
Yeah, because all like the other relationship ones are like, you tried to kill them, they tried to kill you. You stopped them from being killed, they stopped you from being killed.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know, maybe something a little different.
Again, or you're the great, 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 great grandmother of the Mulberry clan.
Yeah. I am definitely going with that.
Okay, great, perfect. Wow.
But then we have to add...
Carlvin?
No, I am not a part of your fucking backwoods.
No, I'm not saying you're part fucking... of the family.
Well, but
you're
tied to the group.
Yeah. Yes, so I've been thinking both in terms of the mechanical history, but also in terms of tying it to the, like, ostensibly, we are all hired to go do something for Wild Rixia. So I'm thinking that, and anyone can chime in, of course, depending on what everyone was thinking. Do we have like a guide or anything? Or is it just like the four of us have been pointed in the direction and have like enough resources to be like, yeah, go report back?
Yeah. So the way I'm imagining this working is that Wild Rixia has several teams that go out. And when they hear of something that could be of interest to the show, they send a group out and they try to send somebody who will, especially if it's in a weird area, somebody who is an expert in that particular field, along with somebody who will be able to possibly protect the group and people who will be able to do some negotiation with whatever wildlife or sentient beings are there as well.
Ooh, can I add another layer where Agatha died doing Wild Rixia, like first adventure, but she doesn't like fully.
Oh, how about this? So she was contracted to do some work for Wild Rixia, but her contract was for, it was a several year contract, let's say 3 or 4 years.
Uh-huh.
She was only 2 years into her contract. And the way the contract was written is death is not an excuse to break the contract.
Yes.
So therefore, you are contractually obligated to basically fill out
I'm
the rest of your years.
Great, I'm changing my appearance to full ghost.
Yeah, right.
Well, yeah, and then maybe you're not related to them, and you're just like, I'm the fucking Wild Rixia ghost who goes around to the wild, dangerous places and gets the local experts to go do shit.
Counting down the days until the contract's up.
The three of them can all die, and that's fine. Yeah. I'll come back, and I'll have enough information for the next chapter of the book.
Yeah.
So, in that case, depending on what you want to do.
I'm fully going Wild Rixia Ghost.
Okay,
cool.
I love that. In that case, again, I would say that probably I was the local, what I would pitch is that I was the local expert who kind of got contacted, or the not even local expert, the subject matter expert who either found it and kind of reported it out.
I will tell you, if this changes your mind at all, basically a message was received by one of the mages that works for Wildrixia. You were instrumental in translating it.
Perfect. And we got Agatha. Agatha was kind of a part of a package deal where like, ah, yes, this is the official employee who like comes and assists and makes sure everything is done up to snuff. There's a bunch of very good history options for me. And a lot of them are like, oh, I see how this would work. You know, they came to you for advice and your advice got them out of trouble. Ask them what the trouble was. Again, a lot of distant relations, blah, blah, blah. Bah, boring, dumb. David.
Yes.
Marcy and I were previously both members of an eldritch group,
100%.
Which is now disbanded.
Absolutely, yes.
And so I need you to tell me why Marcy left this eldritch group, and then I will tell you why I left this eldritch group.
Let me think for a second, because that threw me for a little bit of a loop. Originally, Marcy was going to not believe that monsters were real. And then she became the younger sister of someone who hunts monsters. And like her relationship is, you know, Darwin is her hero. And so I'm thinking like Marcy writes fan fictions about all the monsters and stories that Darwin comes back and like shares with her. And I'm thinking, ooh, I wonder, actually, she probably got kicked out of the Elder God group after FBI agents came to their door and said, Marcy, you can't be posting confidential information about these monsters that your brother is telling you about online.
That would be the RBI, Rixian Bureau of Investigation.
Yeah,
right.
So she was leaking government secrets to an Elder God forum unwittingly.
And they're like, you can't be here anymore.
And after that, they like she had to leave, basically like had a ghost.
Ooh, I really want Marcy at some point to mention doom scrolling because it takes on a completely new meaning.
Need to remind everyone, this is in Rixia.
My well, fantasy
doom,
phone.
Doom and scrolls.
Definitely.
You could definitely doom scroll in Rixia.
I'm going to forget this is in Rixia so many times. I shoot them with my actual handgun.
I know. That's why I was saying it, because I know I will as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then I think the counterpoint to that is that you knew stuff, but not from stuff in the group.
Right.
And so they just like someone came to you and was like, hey, you got to shut all this down. Like, this is too close to the truth.
Yeah.
Whereas I left the group shortly after, then it was, I was surprised that you left and never got a satisfactory answer, but so it goes. I left because they got minute details of obscure rituals incorrect.
Yeah.
And it was like, and the whole artifice was shown bare for me. It's like, well, if they got this wrong, then how can I possibly believe any of this is truly the deep secrets of Rixia, the true wills of the gods that I had been promised? I can't be here any longer.
All right. So does everybody now have at least one tie to one other character at the table?
I just know that I'm a Wildrixia PA for eternity. Yeah. So I don't know if that necessarily ties me to the group.
You didn't
I probably brought Carlisle in. I probably also contacted Darwin.
Yeah.
But that's not, I don't know if I need a stronger tie to anybody.
You really read the contract wrong, where you thought it was only 8 years and didn't see the eight was on side.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you die on the job, you have to remain as a spirit on the show
for infinity years.
Well, and it's like, or is this how you move on to the afterlife, right? It's like, this is the unfinished business, is her ongoing
contract.
Right. Wildrixia contract.
Yeah.
It is actually one more job.
It is a physical paper that is preventing you from moving on. All right, so now that we've finished character creation, let's go around the table, reintroduce our characters, and then we can get started.
Hi, everyone. I'm David, and I normally play Castgrim Brightmane, the Dwarven Warlock, on Reckless Attack. But today, I am playing something totally different, which will not be revealed until later in this episode.
But you're still playing it on Reckless Attack.
I still am.
Yeah. You're still playing it on Reckless Attack.
Normally, 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jonathan, and I'm actually going to introduce myself.
Well, fine.
I am playing Darwin the Crooked, and I, unfortunately, have a kid sister now. Just seemed to materialize out of thin air after I made a pact with a devil, and now we're here.
Going back a little bit, hi, it's me. I'm playing Marcy, the kid sister that materialized after someone made a pact with the devil. Shouldn't do that.
Being naughty.
Does Marcy know?
She has her suspicions.
Okay.
These character descriptions went from 0 to 60.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah. I guess we're going full character descriptions, everybody. Yeah. So
she is the devil that you made a pact with and now is your biggest fan.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm trying really hard to remember Buffy's little sister's name, and
cannot. That was Dawn.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. I'm Sophie. I actually love Buffy, and just have forgotten details since my last
rewatch. Really important. You all know I love Buffy.
Today, I will be playing Agatha, the monstrous ghost production assistant of Wildrixia.
And I am Nathan. I usually play everyone else, but today I will be portraying, that's right, Carlisle Llewellyn Cowdery VI, a.k.a. Carlvin, who is the expert of the group. He is a young academic who is hyper-enthusiastic, usually about a kind of smattering of a variety of different topics, but found himself in the middle of an adventure thanks to one of his most recent fixations.
All right. Should we just kick in, dive in?
Yeah,
just go in. Let the puns roll. All right. Roll the opening credits. As you sit in the small room waiting for the monthly meeting to start, you glance around and take in your fellow crew members of the Wildrixian Exploration, Contact, and Navigation Group, affectionately known as the Wrecking Crew. Eventually, David Attenborough enters the room and begins to address your group.
Thank you all for being here. We have an exciting opportunity in front of us. Not only have we been invited to visit the Awakened Vale for Wildrixia, we have the opportunity to help the denizens there with an issue they are having. One of our staff mages received a distress message from a member of the Alluvium Council, a governing group of awakened rock, metal, and flora that makes decisions regarding the Vale. While we were able to translate the message, thanks mostly to our expert here,
and he gestures towards Carlisle.
Carlvin waves just a little bit at everyone, just looking very pleased with himself.
We were also able to recreate the background noise, which he has stated is also quite important. Magistar Maestro, if you would please play the message.
Agith Sarai, wearing the robes of a staff magi, stands up and gestures, and then says some words that you aren't able to quite focus on or remember, and the message begins to play.
Pressure on us. We need your help.
Rocks.
Rocks. In case you didn't get it before.
That's right. Oh my gosh.
God damn it, Steve, you've done it again.
Gosh, can we just put all of our money into more musical musicians?
For those who are who have not listened to last year's April Fools,
please do.
Also yeah. unveiled bespoke
yeah.
Cover parody songs oh, yeah. that were just out of nowhere. And here we are once again.
Yeah. Just in case you didn't catch the whole thing, they got this message. Basically, there are traitors in the Illuvian Council, and they need help weeding them out, figuring out who they are. And they said, in 1 week, it'd be too late.
Yep.
We are rocks.
I'm trying to figure out Illuvian. It's like, there's something there.
And that reminds me. There are, of course, a lot of puns that are going to come up tonight. So the way this is going to work, when we did this before, if you guessed the pun, you got inspiration. There's no real inspiration in Monster of the Week. However, you are allowed to then get a plus one on a die roll of your choosing. And you can accumulate those up to plus two. Otherwise, you have to kind of designate the pluses to go to other characters.
Etten is a mythical creature in D&D. I got that. I don't remember what it is.
Yeah. The Etten is the two-headed giant.
I was really thinking a tree person.
No, Ent.
Yeah, I know.
That would be the Ent, yes. But hey, I'll give you a plus one.
Hey!
Nice.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by A Foul Light Shines, a new free serial novel based on a D&D campaign. The Empire of Fire and Water has known 20 golden years of peace since the end of Aegenion's War, a peace which is now in peril. When a ragtag group of friends intervene in a grotesque monster attack, they're too late to save a wounded man who leaves them with an encrypted journal and the words, "Trust no one, Tyr." Can the gang find Tyr, escape the claws of more strange monsters, and uncover the lurking threat to the Empire before it's too late? This story features themes of found family and strength in diversity, and is available for free on Campfire and Royal Road. A Foul Light Shines. Come for the fantasy. Stay for the cheese-obsessed goblin gunslinger.
Hi, everyone. David here with the Midroll. We hope you've been enjoying the episode so far. If you want more of the Reckless Attack crew, come join the community on Discord. The link is in the show notes of the episode and on our website, recklessattack.com. If you want to support the show, head on over to Patreon, where you can get access to our behind-the-screen talkback series, as well as our new series, Reckless a Snack, where we eat snacks and chat about the question of the day. As always, if you like the show, be sure to tell a friend about it too. Thanks so much for listening. And now, back to the episode.
So, just in case the message didn't make it perfectly clear, these folks on the Illuvian Council, they need us to smoke out some rats, right?
Yes, that is correct. And David Attenborough continues. We received that message almost a week ago. Time is of the essence. Please go to the Awakened Vale and help the Illuvian Council identify the traitors within their mists and find the entity or entities that are trying to undermine them. Also, look out for any candidates that would make interesting content for Wild Rixia. Remember, these are ancient beings, and having them, owe us one, so to speak, would be quite advantageous for any future endeavors in that area. We have also been able to determine that the Vale itself is on an adjacent plane to our own. We can get you close to the border, but not into the Vale proper. Now, any questions I can answer for you before Maestro here sends you to the outskirts of the Vale?
Carlvin's hand shoots up.
Yes, sir.
Carlvin, who is late 20s, immaculately dressed in kind of scholar's robes, clearly well put together, with kind of these big glasses and an air about him of authority and, of course, knowledge. He turns to you all and he's just like, you know, it was really interesting translating that. I really had some trouble with it. We'd have gotten it even sooner if we had been able to really nail down some things. You know, I was looking for these resources, actually. And, you know, wouldn't you know it, that the library book that I needed was already checked out, if you can believe it. He keeps talking. He will keep talking until interrupted by...
Yes, that fascinating. I'm sure you can discuss that along your travels. I'm sure the rest of your party will enjoy hearing about all of the details. But, oh my, look at the time. Well, if there's any, aren't any other questions?
In the group, a young 15-year-old girl with black hair tightens the straps of her newly purchased adventurer's pack and whispers over to Darwin.
Hey, Darwin, have you been to the Awakened Vale before? You haven't told me any stories about that place.
So, standing next to you, Marcy, is a middle-aged man wearing functional leathers. He's got his adventurer's pack as well, but his has seen some wear and tear. And he just elbows you and just says, I've never been to the Awakened Vale, but can't be that bad. It's full of rocks, right?
Yeah, that's what the song said. It's just rocks.
So I'm not expecting too much trouble, but we'll see when we get out there. Don't ask too many questions.
But, what's that? There's a weird floating thing?
As Marcy points over, Agatha looks at the time, looks at David Attenborough's stress, and is like, all right, adventuring group. Let's go. I'm Agatha, the Wild Rixia production assistant.
Are you another tour guide?
Wow, Marcy. Whoa.
Are you another tour guide?
Learn some industry lingo. Production assistant means I'm responsible for this whole thing going well, going smoothly. Yes, I am a ghost. Yes, I am contractually obligated to fulfill these duties before moving on to the afterlife. So, you are between me and eternal peace. I will destroy you if you get in my way.
Hey, let's calm down.
I'll also destroy you. Let's get moving.
What a spirited group we have, wouldn't you say, David? Wow.
Spirited? Do I get inspiration?
Yeah.
Not yet. Of course you do.
Wait a minute. I think, aren't I?
I got one. I got one, everyone.
I don't know what to say.
Is David coming with us? David
no.
Attenborough.
Hi, I'm playing David Zhang, Master of the Week character.
The mundane.
Yeah, the mundane.
The fucking nerd.
No, David Attenborough will not be going with you. Any other questions?
David, don't give him a chance. Let's go.
This is very true.
Will
yes,
there be snacks?
You are, Agatha, you are correct as always.
Questions about per diems, questions about what sort of authorial academic credits we get, any discoveries,
as these discussions are happening, you see both David and the staff magi, the Githzerai, are kind of gesturing you towards a carved spot on the ground, which looks like to be in a circle pattern that can fit at least the four of you, maybe a few more people. You do hear like a thump, thump, as like a staff hits the ground twice, and then there is a flash of light, and you are no longer in the Wild Rixian headquarters.
But wait, my son.
Off camera, David Attenborough turns back to the staff magi and says,
well, at least they'll be gone for a little while.
After a slightly jarring teleportation, you find yourselves in a small grove of trees. About 100 feet away from you are what appear to be two large rock formations on either side of some kind of shimmer in the air, until you see that one of the rocks moves. The rock formations are actually earth elementals, and each one is standing next to the shimmering doorway.
Hello! We are the called upon group from Wild Rixia. We would like to enter the Awakened Vale. Carlisle, do you have anything to add succinct manner?
Yes, excuse me. Yes, no, I've prepared something for exactly this. Carlisle left with the largest backpack of the group, probably. It is filled with books, with nonsense, and what appears to be just a large tent just stacked on top of it. Not obviously folded out, but a tent nonetheless.
It's like one of those truck pop-up tents.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And he rifles through his bag and takes a really uncomfortable amount of time trying to find a specific paper. And as he's doing so, there's a running commentary of, oh, not this. And, oh, no, oh, my God, I didn't even want to pack that. Oh, my goodness. Oh, actually, remind me to tell you about this paper. It's really funny, actually. Oh, here we are. And he takes out a piece of paper that just is filled with strange eldritch markings. And then after having found it, steps forward, kind of clears his throat a little bit and starts obviously reading from it. And he is delivering this with a mix of theatricality and also awkwardness, where he's very pleased with himself and he's trying to be very magnanimous, but is also, you can tell, even in a different language, very awkward in doing so. And this will go on for some time.
Agatha has a stopwatch. And just looking at it and every now and then gauging the elemental's reaction to it. And if they start looking displeased, we'll just cut off the actual paper and like end the speech.
Agatha, they don't look like they are expecting us, do they?
So what I would like is for Carlvin to please make an act under pressure roll.
Aha! I'm glad that you mentioned that.
And because Agatha is, I'm going to use air quotes here, helping.
Yeah.
You can make a help out roll.
What is that one?
So the help out, if you are at least partially successful, you will be able to add a bonus to Carlvin's roll.
Okay. I will help out.
I was briefly excited because I thought I had taken one skill, but then I decided not to take it. And so this will not be good.
Let's start with Agatha's help out roll.
That will be a 7.
7. That is a partial success.
Okay.
Carlvin, on your roll, you do get to add an additional 1.
That's great, because that pairs very nicely with my +0 that I have to act under pressure and generally be cool. But that is a total of 10. Which means that, wait, it doesn't mean anything special.
that is, however, full success.
Yes, it means that I do the thing.
Do the thing. So you give your speech, and as far as you could tell, you even have the correct dialect down.
Wow.
You smatter in a little bit of slang, earth elemental slang.
It's because it's the only dialect that I know.
Right. And it's hard to read earth elementals since they don't really have a face and they're kind of just these living rock type beings. But you see them slightly turn to each other. And then when they speak back to you, Carlvin, you're able to translate. And what they say is,
the veil is closed. None in, none out.
Marcy would like to take this time to do something incredibly stupid.
Starting off strong.
All right. Marcy is going to grab Darwin's hand and begin,
I told you not to touch me, kid.
Begin dragging you towards the entrance that the two elementals are protecting. And she says, well, yeah, but you're my big brother. You're the famous hunter, Darwin. Everyone knows who you are. They must let you in. And she is going to try and basically walk us through the gate. I'm using the move, what could go wrong?
All right, let's find out.
Whenever you charge into immediate danger without hedging your bets, you may hold 2. You may spend your hold to inflict 1 harm, reduce someone's harm suffered by 1, or take +2 forward on an act under pressure roll.
So I guess, actually, I'm going to have you make a kick some ass roll.
Okay.
That seems to be the most appropriate for this particular situation.
Or is it manipulate someone?
Well,
I would say manipulate someone, because she's like
She is not acting under any authority of her own, but she is like trying to say, hey, Darwin, you have authority.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yes.
They must know who you are.
You are right. So let me rephrase that, because when I said manipulate someone, it came out like kick some ass. And yeah. I don't know why.
Weird.
So I'm going to have you make a manipulate someone roll.
Okay. Marcy is going to manipulate. That's a... well,
I really tried to help you out.
It is a six.
Six.
They just haven't heard about your stories yet, brother. They know who you are. They must know.
So the two elementals that are standing on either side of the gate, they look down at you because they're probably 10 or 12 feet in height. And they lean over, and it's a little precarious because it looks like the rock wall is leaning in towards you and about to collapse. And essentially they say,
we have strict orders to not let anyone in, especially with the vote taking place.
Because Marcy and Darwin are now the closest,
mm-hmm.
if you could both please make an investigate a mystery roll.
Marcy with a 7. Darwin with a 7.
Both of those are partial successes. You notice that, and Darwin, with your monster hunting background,
mm-hmm.
one of them has a small crystal that looks like it is not part of their natural earth elemental form, but it looks like it's kind of been embedded into one of them. You notice it and you partially recognize it as some kind of messaging stone or like a sending stone, not for immediate communication, but it's something where a message could be put into it and replayed later. However, because it was a partial success,
uh-huh.
one of them notices you taking note of that stone and turns and says something to the other one. And they both move to try to hit you.
Heads up, group. They're incoming.
The way combat works in Monster of the Week is you guys decide what you want to do. I, as the narrator, do not make any die rolls. Everything
Must
is based
be nice.
On how... It's great. Everything is based on how well you do with your die rolls. So typically for fighting, it's going to be a kick some ass roll. And depending on how well you do, you will do some damage to them, or you might totally miss them. They might do some damage to you if you don't get a complete success, if it's only partial, that kind of thing. So amongst yourselves, go ahead and determine who wants to go first and what you would like to do.
Carlvin finds himself at a perfect intersection at two of his kind of prime operating like procedures, where one is paying very close attention to things, and two is being very afraid most of the time that he is out of his element. So I would like to roll to read a bad situation to just kind of kick things off and kind of immediately react to things, if that works.
Go for it.
So that is plus sharp. That is a 10.
Oh, nice. Ooh. That is a complete success.
So that means I get to hold 3, which is awesome. And I can spend a hold to ask the keeper, you, one of the following questions. I'm not going to read them all out. I'm going to ask if this works for you. What's most vulnerable to me? And kind of what I'm especially looking for is Carlisle has studied these things, you know, is familiar certainly again with their dialects, with whatever information he was able to find, knowing that this has been closed off kind of to people for a long time. So he is just trying to, in this moment, recall some information of like, ah, yes, they are weak to water, or they are whatever, like, ah, their vision is based on movement. They can't see you if you stand very still.
What you're able to determine is that typically earth elementals are somewhat resistant to physical damage, but items that would pierce them, so like, this is going to be a bad example, but like a rock hammer or a piton, something that is hammered in that would do piercing damage, would probably do full damage to them.
Guys, I got a bad feeling about... Oh my gosh, oh my gosh! Stab him! Quick! Stab him, stab him, stab him!
Agatha, on her turn, would like to use her ghostliness to...
Seems perfectly reasonable.
Be incorporeal and then corporealize the instant she can grab that crystal and then get out of there.
What are you rolling for that?
I was going to use magic because okay. I'm a ghost.
Sure.
That's a bad. Oh, wait, that's an 8. Wait, 9, actually.
9, okay.
Thank God I'm weird.
God, it's good to be weird.
Yeah, it's good to be weird. So 9 is a partial success. You are able to grab the crystal. However, at that same time, the elemental slams its hand down because it sees where you're going. Mm-hmm. And so you have the crystal in your hand, but its hand is kind of over and enveloping yours, which on the crystal.
I'm going to yell out to Agatha. Agatha, grab that thing. We're going to need it. As I'm pointing at the stone that you're trying to grab.
What do you think I've been doing?
And I'm going to drag Marcy and I through this portal to just see, like, can we get through this thing?
Okay. I would say that would be act under pressure.
Sure. Ooh, an 11.
Oh,
with my plus 0.
Do you have any plus ones, any holds or anything?
No, I don't have anything.
Okay.
Just well, some puns, John. No,
dang.
Well, 11 is still a complete success.
Yeah.
You actually you make a little left dodge, right dodge, and you straight on till morning and then slam into something.
Ah.
It's not like a brick wall. Mm-hmm. It's more like it gives a little bit and then flings you backwards. Unfortunately, you are not able to get through to the other side of the portal.
Ah, jeez. As Marcy and Darwin are by this portal, Marcy is going to use her third ability. Oops. And it says, if you want to stumble across something important, tell the keeper. You will find something important and useful, although not necessarily related to your immediate problems.
I am obsessed with that.
And so Marcy, you know, like trips over something, like finds something in the dirt by the portal and like trips over it.
Yeah.
And it's like, ow, what
something,
is this?
Something plot convenient, okay. If not immediate danger convenient.
Is there a role that is associated with that, or is it just an ability?
It just says it's an ability.
All right. You actually are moving towards the portal to follow Darwin, but you trip and your hand goes through part of the elemental. There is something there, but it seems to be covered in what looks like an illusion of the rock elemental. But there is definitely something solid underneath it.
Darwin, look, did you see that? There's something weird with that one. Yeah, your hand passed right through. What's going on? And so Marcy is going to like keep pointing at that one, looking at you all in wide-eyed excitement.
Agatha will yell at Darwin, you come get this crystal. I'll deal with that. And Agatha turns to where Marcy is pointing at the potentially illusionary.
It's just like you, Agatha. Go be friends.
Agatha takes a dagger to the heart of
because
like, I am
all ghosts
real.
Know each other.
And Agatha will use magic to dispel the illusion.
Okay.
9 on the die with plus 3.
Ooh, wow.
Nice.
12.
Which one are you going for? The one that has the crystal or
no,
the other one?
I'm dispelling the illusionary. Illusory.
Rock
Earth elemental that Marcy
the one that Marcy fell into. Okay, that is the one that does not have.
Yeah, I told Darwin to go get the crystal. That's on him now.
All right. Yeah. All right.
So you concentrate and you gesture out and the visage of the earth elemental shimmers and then kind of falls away. And there is a large, what looks like a four-leaf clover there that kind of like turns towards you, looking at you with its four leaves, and then looks down and then looks back up and then says something in a different language than it had been using before to the other earth elemental.
Could I please roll for weird in this moment? Because one of the options is communicate with something that you do not share a language with.
Oh!
So I will roll for weird. That is a 10.
Oh, nice.
So I think he hears this kind of other language and looks up and sees that it is some sort of weird clover creature and dives back into his bag and rifles, and then pulls out a weird textbook, flips it open to some sort of magical, like a magical spell, and utters out the D&D equivalent of, I don't know, what is it?
It's
like
an incantation.
Speak languages or whatever.
Sure.
And it just says, what are you doing? What are you?
At that, both the earth elemental, or what looks like an earth elemental, and the clover look in your general direction, all you hear is, "The vote for peace must not go through. Leave no witnesses."
So he starts going into, he's like, "Well, I think we already knew this. I think they're maybe the traitors that we're supposed to weed out." And then they say, "Leave no witnesses," and his eyes shoot wide. He's like, "Hey, they're gonna try to kill us." And he immediately dives back into his bag for something else, and he's like up to his shoulders now.
At the "they're gonna murder us" part, Agatha will just like shoot her arms straight. And her hands turn into this like ethereal whirlwind. And she's just going straight for the earth elemental that has the crystal. And her gear choice is going to be a 3-harm hand heavy huge sword.
Cool.
And she's going for the earth elemental with the crystal.
All right.
And she is aiming for a clover-sized body within the earth elemental.
That is definitely a kick some ass move.
That will be an 8.
You hit it and it cuts through, but it shifts and it's going to use its maneuver strike slip fault. And so a shard of rock actually comes out and hits you for 2 harm.
God damn it. I take but one less because I'm immortal.
That is true. But the being that looks like a rock, still looks like an earth elemental, collapses in front of you.
Great. Pick up the crystal.
You now have a crystal.
Let's move this train, everybody! I got what I think we need! Let's move it! I see Darwin moving towards the portal, like, "Darwin, try it with this time!" And throw the crystal to him.
And I'll grab the crystal out of midair and just try to, like, test the spongy portal again to see if it changes at all.
So it still has a little bit of the sponge to it, but it's like, and then your hand goes through.
All right, everyone, let's go. Let's go. Let's go. I am going to actually pull out a wand that I have and fire off a Rixian equivalent of a magic missile at the clover. I'm going to use
the Rixian equivalent of magic missile. is a magic missile.
the monster of the week equivalent?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm going to use magic to do 1 harm towards the other clover to see if I can at least slow it down.
Okay.
11.
Nice.
Oh, definitely.
Doing well.
And actually, because that clover doesn't have the kind of rock illusion around it, it takes the full force of this thing, and the middle of it darkens, and then it also collapses to the ground.
Oh, hey. All right.
Carlvin finally hears the big clatter of the rocks and looks up, still buried deep in his bag, and is like, "Oh, I guess I won't be needing this then." He just starts repacking it, even though his arms are still inside of it. "That was very dangerous. I am an academic. And the sword and oh my."
Agatha just like kind of pats him on the shoulder as she guides him. It's like, "Yeah, that's why I'm here. Don't worry about it, Carlvin. It'll be fine. They'll hit me before they hit you."
And Marcy just envelops Darwin in a big old bear hug. It's like, "Yeah, you got him. We did it.
Way to go, big brother."
Yeah. And I'll, at the last second, before we leave, I'll say, "Carlvin, welcome to the wrecking crew. You get used to it."
I hope not.
So you're able to take a moment as that last blow has been dealt and look at your fallen foes. The one that still looks like an earth elemental actually begins to change and shrink, no longer looking like earth and rocks. The skin takes on a more greenish hue and their form changes to that of a large green clover. You're also holding now this iridescent stone that you had found. Carlvin, you recognize it as a record stone, and you have experience with these, and if you would like, you could play the recording that was magically stored inside of it.
Carlvin is looking over this gem, and he's like going off on this whole tangent of like, "Oh, well, now that I have it, of course, it's one of these, who's obviously was originally constructed using blah, blah, blah." And eventually, as he's kind of turning it over, it's like, "Well, it's actually very simple to play, and you just kind of do this, this, and the other thing," and he kind of rearranges it like a Rubik's Cube. And as we are kind of walking into the portal, I'm imagining whatever is recorded on it
starts to play.
And listen, Sham is back with a brand new intention. Something grabbed a hold of me tightly, flow the ideas daily and nightly. Will it ever stop? Yo, I don't know. Here is my plan, you I'll show. Fake we are rocks and rock a scam like a vandal. Take over all and scam a dumb elemental. Then I'm voted speaker and boom, I'm killing mortals like a poisonous mushroom. Deadly when I plan a dope parody, genocide being the best of the felonies. Love it or leave it, you better not play. You better get in line, do what I say. If there was a problem, yo, I'll stone it. Check out my plan, which is great, and I know it.
Pretend we're nice, nice, baby. Pretend we're nice, nice, baby. We'll be nice, nice, baby.
Nice. Word to your bedrock.
And that's where we're going to stop this episode to be picked up next week.
Wow. Okay.
Welcome cool. to the Awakened Veil, a rock in good time.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
I have a question.
Yes.
Is this the Patreon intro? Like, are we introing the Patreon episode in this moment?
I thought so. Yeah, I was not planning on it.
Well, because I thought we were doing relationships and characters.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So leave it all in.
For our,
what are we doing here? Who are you people?
Right.
Guys, we got really shitty at podcasting.
There was a hiatus where we just couldn't record.
And we got very bad at it.
God. All right. So
we're always bad at it.
Yeah, right.
I don't know if it's any difference.